Quick math, beauties. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything just costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Jillian. That's netsuite.com/Jillian. netsuite.com/Jillian.
When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day. Okay, guys, Audible time. Audible.com, you know the drill. The leading provider of premium digital spoken audio information. They have over 180,000 audiobooks, people. Users can sign up very, very easily by going to audiblepodcast.com/exercise. They're going to give my listeners a free book of their choice and a free 30-day trial. Plus, when you do sign up, you build credits, so you get free books as well. Yeah, nobody else does that. Nobody. Nobody. And you can listen to the book anywhere. iPhone, Android, Kindle, iPod, MP3 player. It is that easy. Autumn recommended a book. All right. Bossy Pants by Tina Fey. I heard it's awesome. I guess I should read it. She wants you to read it. So what are you waiting for? Go to audiblepodcast.com/exercise. That's audiblepodcast.com/exercise. And get started today. All right, we have a new sponsor, and I'm pretty excited about this one because I am a customer of theirs, The Honest Company. And if you're a mom, I pretty much guarantee you've heard about these guys. But even if you aren't a mom, they have clean products, and I mean chemically safe products, that range from personal care to home cleaning, health and wellness, vitamins and supplements. These guys are doing it all right now, and we've just partnered with them to be advertisers on our podcast. So those of you who do know, it was founded by one of the co-founders is Jessica Alba. And these guys want to offer our listeners a free trial of their most popular products. And all you have to do is visit freehonest.com and choose a free trial of up to 9 products for just $5.95 shipping and handling. You can choose diapers, wipes, personal care, home cleaning essentials, as I said, health and wellness vitamins, you name it. Get your free trial today for just $5.95 free shipping and handling at freehonest.com.
You're now listening to the Jillian Michaels Show.
Okay, so how's everyone today?
Good.
Good.
Oh, pretty good.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
Not too shabby.
All right. Jakester.
Doing well, thank you.
We don't have Andy right now. She is at a doctor's appointment, so we're doing the show, the beginning of the show without her. And all right. So I've been going through this whole positive time period.
Wow.
I know, which is terrifying.
And how long has this lasted?
Well, you know what? I was talking to my shrink the other day. And so we always start out, and I always want to be like, how are you? Which, of course, you know, your shrink's not going to tell you. They never tell you how they're. But he's like, you know, what's going on? I was like, things are good. And he was like, wow. And I kind of was like, you know, my family's good. Mm-hmm. We had a cancer scare in the household that I wasn't talking about it because I was like, I'm not going to create a bunch of drama until I know what's going on. It wasn't me. It was a family member.
Okay.
But it was fine.
Okay, great.
The biopsy came back fine, and I thought this would be, I was like, this is perfect. Right when everything is going professionally, you know, perfect, and my household is doing well, and of course, you know, I don't want to tell say who, but this person would get cancer. No cancer, nothing. Everything's, and I was talking to my shrink, and you know, the last 5 years have been a challenging 5 years.
Yeah.
And I think it's because, you know, I got to a point in my career where I became a relatively public figure. And when you get to a place where you have a certain modicum of success, people just go after you. Mm-hmm. It's like, it makes great news to say, oh, that person who says they're a good guy is really a bad guy. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, she got really successful, so the target's on her, and it becomes king of the hill. And it mm-hmm. just was a rough 5 years. And I just started to think, all right, this is life. Like, I'm always going to be, someone's always going to try to sue me. Someone's always going to try to blackmail, you know, it's just, this is life. This is part of being a public figure. And it is. And anyway, so in this period recently, like, things have just been going smoothly, really smoothly. Like, everything's going well. And every aspect of my business is going well. Deals are closing left and right. You know, I have 2 TV shows, like a clothing line, food line, like everything's going so well. Hmm. And I told my shrink, I'm like, I'm terrified. And we started talking about how scary the concept of hope is. Have you ever thought about that?
Mm-hmm, 'cause you don't want to get let down.
Right. That's exactly it. Hence the concept of, like, the audacity of hope, you know, daring to dream. Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. Because the minute that when you feel like all is lost, mm-hmm. then you've got nothing left to lose.
Right.
Or, you know, when you're like, ugh, you know, I'm going to be nihilistic and the world's a horrible place and this, that, the other. And, it, you know, then it's just like, it's all bad. And you can kind of, yeah.
That's a bad place to be, though.
It is. You're not wrong. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. But you've defended yourself out of weakness, of course,
right.
from being exactly disappointed, hurt. And interestingly enough, people used to ask me, what is the, you know, the contestants on Biggest Loser, like, what's the thing? What is it that's going to determine whether they make it or they don't? And I see, you know, they can all lose weight. That's not the make it. The make it is who can keep it off.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of different things, you know, their environment, their home environment is critical. And have we given them the tools to manage their home environment in a way that's more successful? And, you know, do they have the psychological strength and the support and all of this? But a really critical factor is hope. Were they hopeful? Did they have hope for their own happiness, for their own future, for the fact that, like, they could find love or they would be capable of having a career that was fulfilling to them? And did they have hope? Hope is so important. I think it's what keeps us going.
Yes.
And I've noticed at times in my life, I unfortunately, and this is, you know, possibly another segment, but I have the ability to really go to a dark place.
Yeah.
Autumn's seen me do
Autumn's
it.
Autumn's nodding.
Yeah. I mean, I really can just, like, when I read
Where
the
do
news
you go?
And dude, like, for example, I'll give you an example. It's pathetic. I get my news on Twitter, and there was, like, this pop science. I follow this thing called Popular Science, and there was this little baby seal.
Yeah.
And they were talking about how he was cruising around the Bay Area. And I was like, oh, I wonder if this is, like, a story of hope. Like, they saved the baby seal. I'm going to read it. So I read it, of course, and they did. They took this little guy and they took him to a rescue center. But, you know, living on the beach, I've also noticed this, mm-hmm. you know, and our house has been under construction at the beach. So we've been living on the farm. But whenever I'm at the beach, there's always an injured seal or a baby seal that's been abandoned, that's sick. And so I know this is going on. And again, I don't want to make this really dark, but I'm also seeing seabirds washing up and dying, like hundreds of thousands of jellyfish are washing up on the beach. And Heidi and I are like, and we've also lost, like, our beach was always a dry beach. Always,
yeah.
Which means there was always sand to walk on.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last 5 years, like, there are times where the water is all the way up on the house. And my neighbors who've been there for 20 years, they're like, you don't understand. Like, this is a whole nother ball game. This has never happened.
Wow.
Not in the history of this beach. And so I'm reading this article, and it starts to talk about how rescuers were saying that they've had to save more baby seals in the beginning of 2015 than in 2013 and 2014 put together. Mm-hmm. And it's the globe, the warming of the water,
mm-hmm.
the pollution in the water, and the lack of food is leaving them starving, malnourished. And when I call the line for, there's a line that you call for seals and wildlife. And now when I called the line the last time we were at the house, it was like, we've got this overwhelming influx of calls. Yes, you know, you found a seal. We'll call you back. And we called and called and called all day Sunday. And it was like, do not approach the seal, you know, this, that, the other. And they never called me back. And Heidi and I have taken a bunch of different animals in there. And I was just like, this is... And so in that moment, like, I have the ability to read that article and, dude, you have no idea where I can go. Aww. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, the world is, you know, oh my God, you know, we're killing the planet and nobody cares and this.
Right.
And I talked to my shrink about it and he's like, look, you know, yes, bad things happen in the world and horrible things happen every day. And I'm like, no, you know, you don't understand. Like, you know, there's more good, bad guys than there are good guys. Mm-hmm. And then the guys in the middle don't do anything, which is like, so, you know, it's like, you see all these really powerful bad guys destroying the planet and, you know, paying people nothing. And this is, you know, it's exploiting people. And I'm telling you. And the good guys are so, you know, outnumbered. Mm-hmm. And he's like, listen, you know, this is your psychological reality. This goes back to like your, you know, your primal childhood of feeling like, you know, the world was not a safe and loving place, which is possible. But like, as I've gotten older, I'm starting to really, I'm like, I'm having this moment of going, oh my God, there's hope in the world, where I'm looking at Bruce Jenner being America's sweetheart. I have seen straight men be like, you go, brother. You follow your heart. I'm like, what? Like, the outpouring of support for him. Mm-hmm. I was like, holy crap.
Yeah.
This is a different world. I know that's a different, but I'm just saying, like, I didn't see a ton of hate the way I expected. I saw a lot of support for it.
Yep.
Then a black female has been voted attorney general nominated and was confirmed. Mm-hmm. A black female.
Mm-hmm.
Attorney general. Wasn't it attorney general?
Yeah.
Okay. Hello? That's history.
Yeah.
History.
And that's what you need to focus on.
I'm trying.
Yep.
This is my, you know, this is my point. I'm trying. Then this whole Nepal earthquake happens.
Oh.
And my mom calls me and she goes, I want you to turn on the news. I'm like, I can't deal with it. And she's like, no, you turn on the news right now. And she's like, what do you see? And it's like, rescue workers, people pulling other people out of the rubble. She's like, you want good guys? There are the good guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's good guys, honey. And I'm like, right, okay. And it's just so scary to be in this place of hope and positivity instead of being like, no, there's more bad guys. And, you know, and I just was like, the necessity of hope is so critical to progress and to be happy, or to have these happy moments in your life. You have to have hope. You have to. There's got to be hope that you'll find love. There's got to be hope that people are inherently good.
Mm-hmm.
Or how can you be good if you're trying to help other people? You have to believe in their inherent goodness. And you have to take the chance that, like, the, you know, some people that are hurt will bite the hand that feeds you.
Mm-hmm.
You got to try to find compassion. And it takes courage. Because when you are hopeful, you're going to be disappointed. You're going to be let down.
Yeah.
And that's a tough place to be.
Yeah.
You don't feel that way.
No, it is. But I think it's better than living in this, like, protective world where, you know, I'm just going to creep on by, the world sucks, and I'm never going to get my hopes up. You're right. You know, it's the way to be.
A lot of people are that way, though, dude.
That's just a shield.
You're right. You're absolutely right, but a lot of people are that way. And Heidi is not that way. It's fascinating.
No,
she looks
not.
At me like she thinks I'm a crazy person. She doesn't understand the way that the things that I see, or the way that I see the world, and she sees she will be the first to see good.
Yeah, that's annoying. See, I feel like it is. I have a sister like that who is so positive every day. It's unbelievable. And always, you know, well, it's going to be fine. You'll get through it. You know, I'll be complete up. It's okay. You're going to learn from it. And it's so annoying, but I am actually really respect it. And then there's people like, I think Jillian and I, who are just like, oh, the world sucks. Ooh. And we can't get to the top. And, you know, it's always like a chase and a fight, and we have our armor on. But
Jeez.
In this case, you really let your armor down and you let hope in, and you're seeing that it's paying off.
Well, and here's the thing.
Yeah.
I think I skew more towards the positive side, too. for the most part. I mean, look, we all have your days. You don't have to walk through life being like, this is amazing. Everything happens for a reason. I'm so you know, I mean, look, shit happens and it sucks sometimes.
God,
but
dude.
I think the other part of it is realizing that you do not have control of anything. Hmm. The only thing that you control, truly have
That's
control
so hard
of.
For me, Autumn, I can't even tell.
Yeah, but is how you react. Is your
I
reaction
know. I know
to
you're
things.
Right.
So do you want to go through your life upset and you know, just and look at all this bad and the only person yeah. that is affected by that is you.
I know.
Or do you want to go through acknowledging these things, like setting the example for yourself, saying it
out
loud.
I fight it. I sometimes feel
I wanna fight
like
it
life
too.
Is Star Wars. Mm-hmm. I really do. And there's like the dark side and the force.
What is that?
And both of them live inside of all of us. And I try to stay with the force. But I'm like, geez, so many people are going to the dark side. And my mom's like, no, so many people are in the light. And I like stay with the force. And then my shrink's like, you need to deal with your own helplessness, that you can't save it all. And you can't. You know, I'm like, for every animal that we rescue, mm-hmm. 100,000 are turned in and euthanized or dumped. And that's what I see. Then I'm like, there aren't enough of us. You know, there's not enough of us, you know. And it's like, then there are the people in the middle.
Those
that are
the activists, the good people in the world that make change. You know,
you
that
know,
can be a
I
good
know,
thing.
I know. And my mom's like, stop seeing you, because your psychological reality is the bad guys. You know, you are seeing only the bad guys. And it's like there's so much good in the world. I guess what this is really about is, like, if you're at all like me, and, you know, unfortunately, you really see a lot of the darkness in the world, and it messes with your head. Mm-hmm. You know, really try to be brave enough to focus on the positives, to like turn on the news, and when you feel like you want to be devastated, you know, look at the good guys pulling people out of the rubble in Nepal. Don't deny the things that are going bad in the world. Help where you can be helpful, but you can't save everybody and everything. Help where you can be helpful. And if I can just, I'm like, stay in this positive space, because you can get more good done mm-hmm. when you're in the positive space. And by the way,
true.
You know, again, and I know this, while you open yourself up to so much more disappointment, you're also opening yourself up to so much more happiness. So I'm like, you know, be in the moment. Like, come on now, just be in the moment. Like, mm-hmm. don't wait for the shoe to drop. Don't think of all the ways the shoe's going to drop.
Right.
Don't think of all that. Just, in this moment, just like,
you earned
just be happy. Mm-hmm. Your kids are healthy. You know, your family's healthy. Like, and then I go to the place where I feel guilty about it. Then I'm like, this is not fair. The world's not fair.
Oh, geez.
I have to. Yeah, no, dude, I'm a mess. But then I'm like, so I'm just, I'm a crazy person. No, I'm a mess. But it's like, as I try to work through it, I really just wanted to say, you know, I'm having these glimpses of actual hope where it's not a foregone conclusion that we'll destroy ourselves and the planet. Because I've almost got to a point where I'm like, this is a game, set, and match. You know, we're going to destroy this planet, and that's it. You know, I don't know when it's going to happen, but it'll be in the next 500 years. And, you know, and now
we're
I'm like,
we're all going to die.
I'm like, maybe we're going to make it, man. Maybe we're going to pull out of this nosedive. And, like, you know, I plug my car into a wall, dude. That's progress.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, there's going to come a time when gas stations are going to be as absurd as typewriters. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, no one's going to go to a gas station.
Thank
I'm like,
God.
We're going to get there. Hopefully it's, like, within the next 20 years. But I'm like, we're going to get there. And my kids are going to be like, oh, my God, have a faint memory of a gas station, you know? Or, like, I pulled into my kid's school the other day, and there was this massive solar tower. Like, all around the school. This school, mind you, is very progressive. It's a private school. But I can't tell you what that looks like. It looks like a sci-fi movie.
Hmm.
I mean, and they're like all around the school, and there are like five of them, and you pull in, I'm like, this looks like a science fiction movie.
Wow, that's crazy.
And it's awesome. I'm like, the future's happening. It's happening here now. And there's gonna be a time where I don't see, you know, power lines all over the road. I see these.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, we're gonna get, you know, I'm gonna see this. And now I have hope. I'm like, in my lifetime, I'm going to see this. Every car is going to plug into the wall. Solar panels are going to be everywhere. Like, I'm going to see this in my lifetime. And I believe for the first time in my life that we are going to see this. Oh, well, hello, Andy.
Hi.
Andy Pants.
Hey, girl.
Hi.
Speaking of future generations, Andy just walked in. All right, well, anyway, we're ready to wrap this up, but I guess I'm just, try to open your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Try to allow the light in. Try to be brave and have courage and be hopeful and know that, yes, you'll be disappointed. Yes, you'll feel helpless at times. But, you know, there's as much sadness as you can feel. Conversely, you can also feel happiness.
Mm-hmm. And you need the sad to be able to appreciate the happy.
Yes.
I hate that, but it's so true.
You know, I said that to Lou the other day. She asked me, like, why, because I was trying to explain why we couldn't go back to Haiti right now. She's just too little. And that was my phone that's dinging, excuse me. And I was like, baby, it's not, you know, I don't want to take her right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say, you know, I don't want to put her on malaria medication. And I was like, it's not time yet. And I was like, Haiti got hurt. And I explained to her about the earthquake and all this stuff. And she's like, why did this happen, Mom? And she wanted to see pictures, and I didn't show her anything too graphic. But she wants to understand. And, you know, I'm telling her within reason. I protect her from things that are... But she's like, why did this happen, Mom? Why did this happen? And I'm like, well, bad things do happen, honey. And I'm trying not to make her like me. I'm trying to help her find a meaning and help her have hope and positivity always. And I was like, bad things do happen, baby. I'm like, but this is how we find the goodness in ourselves when we go and we try to help. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and people came in and people did help.
Oh, yeah.
And so you're right. It's like, this is how, you know, I'm like, try to allow this stuff to bring out the goodness in you, not the badness in you.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that was a weird opener, but.
No, it's important.
Yeah,
we'll
try to think of something to be more funny now that Andy's here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that the party's in the house.
Okay! How many of you out there have heard about QuickBooks? I know I have. QuickBooks is your software solution designed to manage payroll, inventory, sales, and other needs for any small business. So if you work for yourself, guess what? They're going to give my listeners an opportunity to save up to 50% on an entire year of QuickBooks self-employed program. So the QuickBooks self-employed program helps separate your business and personal expenses so you can quickly track what you spent for work and what you spent on yourself. And it takes the guesswork out of your estimated quarterly and year-end taxes. Oh, how nice is that? So come tax time, you're going to know how much money to set aside for Uncle Sam. Ouch, pain. And how much gets to stay in your pocket. So for instance, those groceries that you bought for your next catering gig, for example, aren't going to get mixed up with the food that you bought for the cookout with your friends this weekend. QuickBooks provides you with the tools to help you maximize deductions like your home office, mileage, and this way you can keep more of your hard-earned money. And let me tell you, I pay a lot of money to an accountant for this. I'm starting to wonder why. Find out what QuickBooks Self-Employed can do for you and save up to 50% at tryselfemployed.com/Jillian. That's tryselfemployed.com/JILLIAN. All right, how many of you are tired of counting your steps? Tired of not reaching your fitness goals? Well, there's a new gizmo. I love it. It's called the Spree Smart Cap, and it's a groundbreaking heart rate monitor that, of course, is designed to help you lose weight, get fit, become healthier, and achieve any fitness or wellness goal that you have for yourself. Now, the Smart Cap looks great, and of course, it keeps the sun out of your eyes, which I love because I always wear a hat to keep the sun out of my eyes and keep the sun off of my face. But it's not just a regular hat, and it lets you do a heck of a lot more than that. It tracks your body temperature, your distance traveled, your speed, your time, your calories burned, and it will even tell you when you're hitting your ultimate stride. Because the Smart Cap uses patented biosensor technology to measure directly from your forehead. So you can ditch the irritating chest strap or that armband that tells you that while you're typing on your keyboard, you've burned more than in spin class. That drives me crazy. The Spree Smart Cap includes an easy-to-use app that communicates seamlessly with your iOS or Android smartphone. You're going to learn when your body is burning the most calories, and at what pace you're achieving maximum endurance. So let's get those fitness goals achieved, people. Use your head, haha, cute pun, and find out why this Spree Smart Cap has been called the world's smartest fitness monitor. No wires, no chest strap, no wristwatch. Put it on and jam. Visit spreewearables.com for more information. Michelle, do the honors.
Oh, we are so lucky today to have Dan Savage, who's the host of Savage Lovecast. And he's here to help us out with some sensitive subjects.
I'm underwhelmed with your intro. So, Dan, welcome to the show, first of all. Give
Thank
me all
you.
The good stuff about activists, writers.
He's
give me the good
Dan
stuff,
Savage,
Dad.
I mean, it goes without saying. I mean, everybody knows that
give
he
me
is
the juice.
He's a great writer. He's a gay
You
activist.
Got a column, a killer column. Dan, where can everybody find your column?
It's called Savage Love, and it runs in about 100 papers across the country.
Wow.
But you can find it online. Like, the easiest place to find it online. Go to the Onion website, go to thestranger.com, and you can find it and enjoy it.
And the podcast, which crushes iTunes every frickin' time a new one gets released. And buddy, do we only find that on Apple? I always get it on iTunes. But are there other places people can get it, or should they just go to iTunes and get the Savage Lovecast?
They go to iTunes, or they can go to savagelovecast.com, where they will can find the regular edition and the Magnum edition, which is a subscription edition that's twice as long and no ads.
Okay. Now, with that said, I have to give you a little history about how come I'm so excited. So you need to know that my partner Heidi, who is like the sweetest, very conservative, very sort of quiet, very reserved. One day I'm in the car on a business call and she's listening to your show and you were counseling a guy about a fetish that he had where I believe he was having sex with a squash. And I, ever since then, I was like, this guy's amazing. Like you helped, you took this call. There was like zero judgment and you talked this guy through and I was like, this guy's awesome. And we've been massive fans ever since. And we've been fumbling our way through some sex questions from time to time here on the show. And I was like, we need help. We need an expert. We need a master. And so I'm so grateful for you that you would come on. So thank
you. Well, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for describing me as an expert. I'm just an asshole with an advice column. When you look up advice in the dictionary, it says opinion about what could or should be done. Literally, the only qualification you need to give advice, to write an advice column, is somebody asked you for your opinion. So I don't consider myself an expert, but I've been at this a long time. I think I've accrued some expertise, but I wouldn't call myself an expert quite yet.
Fair enough. Well, let me tell you, you're far more qualified than anyone in this room.
Amen.
Yes. So to us, you're an expert.
You're an expert.
You're God.
Yeah. So we had teased on the social networks for people to ask questions. And the thing is, we noticed there was a theme. And I knew you didn't have time to talk to everybody. But for example, and Nicole, will you read the one about the foot fetish? And then I'll kind of make this a little more accessible to the masses. But go ahead, buddy.
Dan and Jillian, I have, for as long as I can remember, had a foot and leg fetish. From sneaking a second look at a woman's foot or athletic leg at the beach or gym, the fetish seems to be growing. In order to not be inappropriate, I feel like I should act on this in a safe, healthy, appropriate way. Any ideas as ways to bring this up with my girlfriend in a subtle, not-so-shocking manner? Any insight into where this fetish typically originates?
Now, Dan, here's the other thing. We got a lot of this stuff about, like, fetishes or fantasies. And so I kind of blended this into one question, and they really want to know, like, how do they communicate this to their partner? I think people are feeling insecure, and help.
Well, the way you roll it out will inform how they react. If you roll it out like, oh, my God, this is a tragedy. I have leukemia. I'm so sorry. It's going to be a burden for both of us. They're going to react like it's leukemia. If you present it as a tragedy, they're going to react like it's a tragedy. You should present it as, hey, it's Christmas morning. Look at this awesome present under the tree. I have a foot fetish. This is great. And, you know, you say to somebody, you know, the way most men feel about tits, that's how I feel about feet. And you shouldn't feel ashamed of it. And you opening up about your kinks or, you know, your desires, gives them a space to open up about theirs. And it can be a really positive thing. But the trick is you can't go into it feeling ashamed. There's a great book called Perv, The Sexual Deviant in All of Us by Jesse Baring. He's a sex writer and researcher, registered Scientific American. He's a university professor in psychology, I believe. And it just really unpacks that almost all of us have things in our sexual makeup. It's normative for humans to have a kink. There's something, you know, the perv, the sexual deviant in all of us. And so everybody has something from column C. You know, column A is all the normal stuff, you know, you can just assume people are into. Column B is like, oh, a little out there and maybe fun. Column C is like the crazy stuff. And most of us have something from column C. As we've seen with, I think, the 50 Shades of Grey phenomena, there seems to be this gender difference, that men know what their kinks are earlier in life. You know, usually somebody who's 18, 19 years old and male has been masturbating about whatever his kink or kinks might be for years. A lot of women don't come into a realization of what their kinks are until later in life. And I think that has something to do with sexual peak. You know, boys hit their sexual peak as teenagers, or so the cliche goes, and women hit that sexual peak a little later in life. And there's something, I think, about that stage of sexual peakdom that causes people just to, you know, express themselves in interesting and new, different ways, or develop interesting new tastes. And there's nothing wrong with it. So long as you're doing it with somebody who wants to do it with you and is willing to indulge you, it's not a problem. It's actually kind of an awesome thing that can really bring you closer together.
This brings up a question. This is not a listener question, but you mentioned shame, and I'm wondering, where do you think all of this shame originates? Because it seems like a lot of us do have a lot of shame around fantasies. And I remember as a young kid having fantasies, and I think a lot of women have these fantasies, but despite the fact that I'm gay, about like rape fantasies or being taken fantasies. And I remember
thinking,
what's wrong with me? Like, I'm sick. And then, you know, it was explained to me, actually, you know, in my own therapy, that this is common, and it has to do with being able to let go, and that's what it was about for me, and not about violence.
And being relieved of responsibility, because, you know, particularly young women have the zap on their heads, and it's, you know, good girls don't,
uh-oh,
and don't want to, and have no desire, and aren't horny. Horny is something that boys are. And so girls who are horny will fantasize about scenarios where whatever it is can happen to them that they want to have happen without them doing it, without them choosing it, with it being chosen for them. A lot of gay boys have those similar fantasies. I'm gay, and when I was 13, 14 years old, I would fantasize about being raped by a man, because then I would be having this gay sex, but it wouldn't be because I chose it. It wouldn't be because I wanted it.
That's exactly what mine was about.
Wow.
Same exact thing that was told to me, that it was so that it wouldn't be, you didn't have to feel guilty, like you could have it, but without feeling like,
and I think,
yeah.
You used a word that I think is really important, which is you wanted to be taken. And I think that we would have an easier time talking about these kinds of fantasies if we used that word instead of rape.
Right.
Because when we fantasize about these things, we're fantasizing about being taken by someone we want to get took by.
Right.
And so it's not rape then. It's not rape if somebody's having sex with you who you wanted to have sex with.
Yeah.
But, you know, we apply the word rape for it because we invent these kind of ambiguous scenarios where consent wasn't granted and this person overwhelmed us with their desire and took us.
Yes, that's it.
But it's not rape in those situations.
I remember feeling, though, like I had thought, is that what this is? I was young, very young, you know, and it was really confusing for me, and I was really ashamed of it, and it was like this weird dark thing, and I didn't understand it, and I can't figure out why the shame, do you think, though, Dan? Do you think it's because
religion?
Yeah, that makes
Amen.
Sense.
Amen. I mean, yeah, right. Hit it.
Also, you know, and I'm a lot of people think I'm a religion basher, but so I'm going to add something to the religion thing. I also think it's some of the shame is hardwired into our experience as humans, as children. Because you remember when you first hear about sex and you go get the birds and the bees conversations and your parents explain to you what sex is, and you think, ew, God, gross, I am never doing that. That's disgusting. And you think adults are terrible and awful and depraved. And then you hit puberty and you're suddenly being dragged toward that stuff that you thought was icky. And that sort of, that judgment that you made about sex before you were interested in it, it's kind of, you have to work through that. You have to dig that out so that you can be not ashamed. You know, I sometimes think the shame that we arrive at sex with is not the shame that was heaped on us, but the shame that we were heaping on adults as children.
Well, that's an
when we were in a stage of life, we were completely indifferent to this stuff, and we couldn't believe adults did these disgusting things. And then you're 14, 15, and you want to do them too, and you're like, oh my God, I'm as icky as they are.
Wow. Yeah. That says a lot about being able to be prepared to talk to your kids about sex in a way that isn't shameful. I mean, it's like if you almost do this preemptive strike, it feels like they can go into their fantasies with it being okay. Wow, that just, wow.
But with so many fantasies being derived from, you know, that crucible of shame and angst and conflict, if you, you know, if you don't allow your kid to have a little shame, they might not have any awesome fun kinks to enjoy as adults.
There's that too. I always say, I'm like, I want to raise them like enough so they know their love, but with enough dysfunction that they've got a great sense of humor. They're at least interesting. You know, I want them to be interesting.
Exactly.
Now, here's another big one. So, like, we had a. Will you read the lesbian bed death one, Nicole? Because I know I couldn't put you on with everybody because I would keep you all day. So we're just going to read you their emails and then I'll give you my generalized question.
Okay.
Why do you think bed death is only attributed to lesbians? Also, do you think it's a real thing?
Okay, so what I put, because I don't think it is, because I've known a lot of my friends, heterosexual couples who are married with kids, seem to go through absolutely that.
Uh-huh.
So my question, I kind of put it into, how do you get out of a rut, unless you know, Andy, what do you have something to add? I can tell by your face.
I'm giving birth in 3 weeks, and so it's been a very interesting time, because I used to cue people pregnancy wise and say, no, make sure you're, you know.
Uh-oh. Do we lose him?
We lost him.
I am sorry, that's not a valid extension.
Oh no, it's not.
That's what he said 4 months ago.
Okay. So good. Note to self.
That was so weird.
Cut this out of the show.
I'm about to give birth,
click. Yeah.
He's like, that is so gross.
No way.
I don't deal with that.
I'll do foot fetishes, but I'm not.
No.
Stranger.
Hi, Dan Savage, please. We lost him. Thank you. So much for the landline.
Yeah.
You done, Michelle? I'm alone here.
No.
She dropped the bass.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
We lost you right after Andy said she was pregnant, and then the line went dead. We definitely did not want to hang up on you. So Andy, sorry, we're going to reiterate one more time. Go ahead, Andy.
So I do think there is such a thing as, like, well, it's not bed death, but it's not rigor mortis, but it's definitely a little bit of bed illness. But the thing is like, it's legit in certain circumstances. I'm giving birth in 3 weeks, and it's been, I don't know, over
you're
like
allowed
a...
You're allowed to clock out.
You're allowed to clock out, and I've had some time out, you know, and it's been like 6 weeks, and most people would say, well, that's, you know, you can still do oral, and you can do that. And I'm like, are you kidding? Oral. That's called Haagen-Dazs is what that's called. Oral.
Yeah, there are certain times in your life where you're, you know, physically incapable or very, very disinterested. Pepper Schwartz is a sex researcher here at the University of Washington in Seattle, and she came up with the term lesbian bed death, and it is a thing. And it's not that there aren't straight people in sexless marriages or even gay people. There are. It's just lesbians report sexless relationships at higher rates, and it certainly jibes with the email I get.
Wow.
Why do you think that is, Dan?
Well,
I feel like, you know, I should weigh in, but I'm like, I am not incriminating myself here, Dan. This is all you. This is all you, buddy.
Know, I don't like to get too gender essentialist about anything, but there seem to be, you know, broadly true things about male sexuality and female sexuality that tend to be a little different. And there's this thing called responsive desire, where, you know, men get horny and want to have sex, and a lot of women will you know, start having sex and then get horny, or will be asked to have sex, which hasn't occurred to them, and then they will get horny. And if you have two women in a relationship, and, you know, if one is an instigator and always has been and always will be, that great, then you're probably not going to arrive at lesbian bed death. But if you have two women in a relationship who are sort of their wiring or their setting or who they are sexually is to respond to being asked, you know, that responsive desire thing, they're both going to then hang back waiting for the other to initiate. And if that doesn't happen, and I just think that the odds of two people who aren't
There's a lot of initiators winding up in a relationship together is
higher when you're talking about female relationships.
Wow. That is true. Because I do, God, when I think now about when things get, like,
too comfortable because it's just kind of, you are sort of wanting to be desired and you are wishing the other person would initiate it, or you get tired if you're always the one that has to initiate it. And then I think women get comfortable and it's like, I'm a mommy and I'm in my blissful mommy place. And it becomes, you know, there's not that male energy that's like, hey, let's go. Come on now.
Yeah.
We got to kind of, you know, and I've always been really cognizant of that because in previous relationships I have experienced it. But, you know, so now I'm like, all right, you know, even when you're not in the mood, like, it's kind of like a workout now. I'm like, we got to do this. Yeah. Like a workout. Yeah,
and that's the thing, that often if you start having sex, you will get in the mood. And so if people have it in their heads that you should never have sex if you're not in the mood, you shouldn't have sex when you're like, you know, 3 weeks away from giving birth, you have the flu, you're not, you know,
it's
physically painful or traumatizing. I'm not like ordering people who don't want to have sex against their will. But if you never have sex when you're not in the mood, you're going to miss out on a lot of great sex potentially and that connection. And so sometimes you got to like throw yourselves into it. You just got to bungee jump, start f***ing. And once you've started, like, you're bungee jumping. You're going to have to go through with it.
Yeah, it's so true.
I love that advice. Always, that's so good.
And like, and we're always so much closer too. Like when we're regular about things. Like,
yeah, me too. I've been with my husband for 20 years.
Wow.
He's amazing and wonderful and hot, and I love him. And you know, even us, every once in a while, we have to be like, okay, it's been a week. We got to like, let's do this.
Yeah.
Because we don't like each other better than we do when we've just had sex.
Yeah, that's so true.
Wow, that's really great advice.
It's so true. Okay, so Dan, I have another question for you. And this is me, and it's about pornography. And so I've gone back and forth on the issue. Part of me, like, I'm like, pornography is healthy. It's something men have been doing since the history of time, and women too. I myself have watched pornography, but I feel like over the course of my lifetime, it went from, you know, as a kid, like looking at your dad's Playboy magazines or Playgirl magazines, to now, you know, the things that are on the web, man, like really hardcore, like,
right,
gangbang, humiliation, feces, women with animals. Ugh. And I've watched a TED talk on it, and this guy was like, this really messed with me. It messed with my perception about women, you know, like, and he started talking about how in porn they have sex with no hands, there's no kissing, there's no touching, because everything's like angles, graphic. And then I started thinking, like, is my son gonna, how am I going to explain this kind of really extreme? Because I didn't grow up with that. Like, do you think there's a limit? Do you think it goes too far? Do you think it's cool and there's an easy explanation? I'm totally confused about it.
I don't think we can say, okay, there's some bad porn out there, so we're not going to have porn anymore, because it's not going to go away. We have to get out in front of porn. There's a great website called Make Love Not Porn that was started by Cindy Gallup, who's this amazing businesswoman and just giant brain. And so we need a discourse that goes right alongside with porn, where we say, you know, there's a way people have sex in porn that's not the way people tend to have sex in reality. That, you know, porn sex is kabuki theater sex. It's not real sex. And so you can enjoy, you can go to kabuki theater and enjoy it. You're not going to leave the kabuki theater expecting reality outside that building to look like what you just saw on stage.
Right.
And so you can enjoy porn and not expect to have that necessarily in your own life. That gonzo stuff that's out there, you know, I'm the parent of a teenage boy. This is the conversation I had with him.
I'd love to hear it. My son's just turning 3, but I'm like, my friends are having, oh, dude, my friends are having this conversation with 9-year-olds.
Yeah, you can.
I mean, 7-year-olds are like.
You can wait a little bit.
But I'm like, it's coming, and I think about it a lot.
You might as well be cool about it, though, and prepare yourself for it to be normal rather than.
Our listeners have kids, so.
The thing you need to say, I think, to a young teenage boy, after you've hammered away about consent, after you've hammered away about, active consent, obtaining consent, not just waiting for no, and birth control and everything else that a young man needs to know, a boy, a teenage boy, is you say to them, you know, there's a lot of porn out there, and this is what I said to my son, there's a lot of porn out there that's made for angry men, for men who cannot find sex partners, men that no one will have sex with, so they want to look at these women that they wish they could be with and enjoy them, but also see them punished for not fucking them. And you're not one of those guys. You're not a guy who isn't going to be able to have sex partners. You're not a guy who lacks all social skills. You're not angry. And I don't want you, if you watch some of that porn, I don't want you to come away poisoned by that anger.
Wow. Oh my God. And you just changed my life right now.
Thank you. But keep talking. Keep talking. Sorry.
And I think if you can get in between, because they're going to see some of that porn. And I think if you can get in between them kind of psychically, in between their, who they believe themselves to be, good guys, decent guys, attractive guys, and who a lot of that porn is made for, even if they enjoy it on some level, they're not going to succumb to the anger that is hardwired into it. And, you know, we have to say there are guys out there who are decent and loving guys who are feminists and not shitty to their partners, who enjoy that kind of porn, who even enjoy that kind of sex. And there are women out there who enjoy that kind of sex.
Right, yeah.
That kind of gonzo, crazy, totally. Rough sex. And so we don't want to say to them, you're all those guys who dig that are angry, awful guys, because they're not. And all women who do that are, or dig that are damaged women who are destroying themselves, because it's not true. But there are a certain number, you know, perhaps even a large number, a large percentage of people in those, attracted to those things, who are potentially damaging themselves or being damaged by it. And you know, you want to immunize your kid against that, against being poisoned by it. And so you just have to talk about it. You have to place yourself.
So smart.
I love the differentiation too, because I'm like, where is the line here? And how do I, like, tell them, you know, oh, this is, I don't want to say this is bad, or what is it, or how do I explain what it is? And I just don't have the tools. I'm not equipped. I don't understand it. And this helps me tremendously. So thank
you. That's smart.
That was my question. And then do you have time? I just have two more that were.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I'm loving this. This is really fun.
Oh, you're very kind. All right. So the next one, I saw a lot of this one. I won't make Nicole read this one, but women want to know, this is absurd. Is this absurd? Can you break a penis? And what's the deal with curved penises? Can you break a penis?
You can break a penis.
You can?
It doesn't have a bone in it, but, you know, there's internal structures that you can snap, and the erectile cavities can be bent or damaged and can break and bruise very terribly if somebody, like, you know, bends an erection.
Jake, are you listening? I hope you're paying attention.
I'm trying to ignore it. I don't want to hear it.
You can also...
Well, don't. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
And then there's a condition called phimosis. You know, some penises naturally have bends or angles, and there's nothing wrong with them. A penis can point down. It can point a little left or right or sideways. It can point up. You know, when a penis is sort of arced up, nobody goes, oh, look at that damaged, arced up penis. But when it's arced down, some guys are like, oh, my God, my penis is broken. Not broken. Just, you've got a fun angle there. It's going to make blowjobs much easier for a person kneeling in front of you if your penis angle down when it's hard. There's an upside.
I love your optimism. Go on.
A little angle left or right can be more stimulating for somebody, because it can feel more intense, you know, during vaginal or anal intercourse. But there is a condition called phimosis, where a plaque will build up inside the penis, sort of a dense fibrous plaque. It's, you know, a tissue. It's not really a tissue. They call it a plaque, and it's dense, it's fibrous, and then it can cause a painful erection where the penis is bent as it attempts to get erect because of this tough tissue. And that can be from an injury.
Is this a common thing?
It's.
Well, you're talking to a room full of women other than Jake, so please forgive me.
I couldn't put a number on it.
Yeah.
But you know, for some guys, it's disabling. They can't have sex. Your erections are painful. There aren't a lot of really effective treatments for it. It can be very, very tragic. And for some guys, it's just, you know, their penises are fine and straight for many years, and then they develop a phimosis, and they have a little angle then, and it's not painful, and they can still function, and yet they feel really terrible about themselves because they feel like their penises are damaged in a way, or unattractive in a way. And, you know, if your dick still works, you have to love it.
You know, I love what you're saying.
Well said.
You know, I just read this whole thing. We were doing these hot topics on plastic surgery, and I ended up reading, like, what were the hot plastic surgeries right now. And the labia one, big, huge.
Yeah.
Women are cutting that stuff off of there. Because they're super, it said that it can be debilitating for them because they're so ashamed. And I was like, oh my God, like, what's that feel like to be so ashamed of your...
And for some, some women out there have labia that are in the way, that are debilitating, that are a physical impairment. Just as, you know, there are guys out there who have foreskins that are so big that it can be very difficult for them to have sex, or foreskins that are so tight that it can be very difficult for them to have sex. And if that guy gets an elective circumcision, we don't say, oh, he's mutilating his body, he's succumbing to, you know, male ideals of beauty that are unrealistic or shaming. We say, you know, he wants his dick to work, and he has a right to have his dick work. So the women out there who get that surgery because their labia are, you know, preventing them from having sex in a pleasurable way. Some women do it for cosmetic reasons. Yeah. We should have a dialogue about that. But ultimately, someone's body is their own body, and they have a right to do with it what they wish.
Agreed.
Yeah. I agree.
I think they should be thoughtful about why they're doing it, and you should be introspective.
Sounds painful.
About why, and are you doing it for yourself, or because there's this, you know, stultifying beauty ideal, or you have this shame that you need to burn off and work through and love yourself. But if in the end you know someone decides that this is right for them,
I had my nose done. I'm just saying, like, if it messed with me that much, if it really upset me and I felt extremely insecure about it, and, like, you know, I can't say I've struggled with the issue. I guess I'm in that particular area. I guess I'm lucky. But I think if I found it, like, really embarrassing and it was very uncomfortable for me to have sex, I would do it.
Yeah. Well, that's even in delivery.
Because my nose made me feel that way. I mean, I had a huge nose. So what's the difference if it makes you feel really
I don't
insecure?
Think there is. Even in delivery parlance, they say what's called a happy stitch after you give birth to your baby. And they'll say, the doctor can give you a couple of happy stitches. And I was like, what? I didn't even know what that meant until I got pregnant. And I knew I had a lot of girlfriends say, get a happy stitch. If you end up having an episiotomy or something, make sure they happy stitch you. And you're like, oh, I understand now.
So they just tighten it up?
They just stitch it a little tighter.
Okay, Dan, last one. And I've heard many different things about this throughout the year. Throughout the years. Okay, female squirting, is that actually real? Despite the fact that I have seen a porno of it, but
it's real.
Come on, Jay.
But Dan,
no. Is it real? But, and is it? Oh, yeah. And what is it if it's real?
Because Dan, I read an article saying it was urine. Is that true?
Is it pee?
It's not necessary. That study was not conclusive. There's also been studies where they've examined female ejaculate, collected it, mopped it up, and it didn't have the same chemical composition as urine.
So it seemed
to have some sort of prostate-ish, like kind of prostate-ish fluid in it. Nobody really knows. You know, male genitals are female genitals on testosterone. So there's nothing that, you know, that guys can do with theirs that female genitals aren't in some proto-form capable of getting to with enough testosterone, right, in utero. So all the bits you need to assemble male genitals are present.
Oh, wow.
And so the idea that there are some women out there, and not all women, who can ejaculate, that they may have some sort of vestigial clump of cells that are functioning kind of as a prostate gland. Perhaps that fluid, you know, that study found that they had women pee, they measured them and their bladders were empty, they became aroused, and then they climaxed and they squirted and their bladders filled and then their bladders emptied again as they squirted. And so they looked at that and said, well, it's urine that filled up her bladder, and her bladder emptied during the ejaculation. So it's obviously urine. It was in the bladder. Well, but maybe that's where this female fluid gathered, for lack of a prostate gland. But even if it's pee, if it makes her happy, who cares?
I just wondered, like, am I missing out? Can I do this? I just haven't figured out how to do it? Like,
there are people out there who tell people that they're missing out if they can't, and that's just more like, you know, female body, you're doing it wrong. We're always finding ways to get to
women.
Yeah,
that's what I always
thought. Your body,
thought.
You're doing it wrong. If you're having orgasms and they work for you and you don't miss it and you look at it and think, wow, that's amazing, but I can't do that, but who cares? I'm having a blast. You don't have a problem.
Dan,
I love
so
how cavalier
awesome.
You are, Dan. You
Thank
rock.
You so much, man. I so appreciate you coming on. I hope we get you back at some point. And
I'd love to come back on. It was a blast talking with all of you. And good luck in 3 weeks or sooner giving birth. Mm-hmm. That's tremendous.
Yeah, they're going to test the afterbirth. It might be something else, but I'll keep you posted.
For everybody who wants to hear more from Dan, his podcast is awesome. Heidi and I are obsessed with it. It's the Savage Love Cast. We get it on iTunes. And as you said, you can get the Magnum version, which is an extended version with no ads, which I highly recommend. And his column, which is the bomb. And you said it was on The Onion, Dan. And what is it called again exactly?
It's called Savage Love. And you can find it, if it's not in a newspaper in your community, at theonion.com or thestranger.com.
Thank you so much. You're just awesome. We appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks so much.
Have a great one.
Thanks.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
I love him.
I love him too.
He's awesome. He just puts it like out there flat with what I love is that he has these conversations with like no shame, no judgment, no like silly giggle, haha. You know, he's very straightforward.
Yeah.
And you know, whether you agree with him or you disagree with him, like what I love the most is that he opens up a dialogue.
He's like
people.
The modern day Kinsley in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Just with like, he's just cavalier and
totally.
A kid would be, you could feel very safe asking questions and not feel bad.
Yeah.
I love that.
Oh, the porn thing just changed my life. I'm like, right, of course that's what
so
this is.
Interesting.
No
yeah.
wonder this is out there, because I was like, who's doing this and why?
And who's
like,
it for?
Who's it for and how am I going to explain this? And like, just... but I don't want to like shame my son for watching porn. And it's
right.
like, as much as, dude, I know you're like, well, he's almost three. My friend's 7-year-old came home mm-hmm. and was on YouTube Googling women pooing and trying to find videos of it.
Wow.
And like, when she asked him why, it's because one of the kids in his class had seen a very famous, disgusting porno that shall go without a name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was like, what is this about?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I can't believe I can't do this. I'm not equipped to have these conversations.
No, but I mean, Jack turning 9 this summer is using words like humping, or he understands like they're having sex, or
really?
He'll say, when do you and Dad have sex? And I'm dying inside, but I'll say when we're in the mood.
Ooh.
Like I'm just being very, very, I've got to,
yeah.
because
yep.
the second he sees shame and embarrassment on my face,
yeah.
he's going to know it's off limits. What did you say to me? Like the worst questions are the ones that aren't answered, or the ones
that are asked.
And so I don't want that to happen to him, and I don't want him to have shame. So we talk about it, and I'll say, well, what does humping mean? I'll ask him so I can at least know where he's coming from. And then I try and explain without going too far, but
right.
literally he's wanting to know, how did you get pregnant? How?
Yeah.
And I'll say, well, you know, when, you know, daddies and mommies love each
Ooh.
Other. But that's like when he was 8, like 6 or 7. Now he's like, no, literally how?
Oh, my gosh.
He wants to know literally how.
Yeah.
We haven't got there yet. I go, here's your iPad.
Listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.